नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3, Text 18. Shri Prabhuda Uvacha
Shri Prabhuda Uvacha
Kamanyara Bhamananam
Kamanyara Bhamananam
Dukha Hatyai Sukhaya Cha
Dukha Hatyai Sukhaya Cha
Pashyat Paka Vipayasham
Pashyat Paka Vipayasham
Mithuni Charinam Rinam
Mithuni Charinam Rinam
Shri Prabhuda Vacha.
Shri Prabhuda Vacha.
Shri Prabhuda said.
Shri Prabhuda said.
Kamani.
Kamani.
Fruit of activities.
Fruit of activities.
Arabhananam.
Arabhananam.
Making endeavors in.
Making endeavors in.
Dukha Hatyai.
Dukha Hatyai.
For the elimination of distress.
For the elimination of distress.
Sukhaya.
Sukhaya.
Cha.
Cha.
And for gaining happiness.
And for gaining happiness.
Pashyet.
Pashyet.
One should see.
One should see.
Paka.
Paka.
Of the results.
Of the results.
Vipayasam.
Vipayasam.
Contrary outcome. Mithuni Charinam.
Mithuni Charinam.
Who are coupled as men and women.
Who are coupled as men and women.
Nirnam.
Nirnam.
Of such persons.
Of such persons.
Translation. Sri Prabhupada said, accepting the roles of male and female in human society, the conditioned souls unite in sexual relationships. Thus they constantly make material endeavours to eliminate their unhappiness and unlimitedly increase their pleasure. But one should see that they eventually achieve exactly the opposite result. In other words, their happiness inevitably vanishes as they grow older, their material discomfort increases. Om Agyanati Miranda Shyaganjana Shalakya Chakshurinikamanatasmashivirvamaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pasaya Bhutale Srimati Vridananda Goswami Niti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarvati Devam Gauravana Vacharani Nevisesi Srinivadi Pashtakar Vishatarani Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shilasi Gaura Bhakta Purva
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
So this is a very interesting section. Now the purport is quite short to this translation. The purport is by the devotees of Srila Prabhupada is as follows. Without the mercy of a pure devotee, it is exceedingly difficult to free oneself from the bodily conception of life, which is the illusory basis of sexual attraction. So this is the sex talk. Hare Krishna sex talk. So I'll just repeat the translation again. Sri Prabhupada said... No, that's okay, Prabhupada. I'll just read it. Thank you. Sri Prabhupada said, accepting the roles of male and female in human society, conditioned souls unite in sexual relationships. Thus, they constantly make material endeavours to eliminate their unhappiness and unlimitedly increase their pleasure. But one should see that they inevitably achieve exactly the opposite result. In other words, their happiness inevitably vanishes as they grow older, their material discomforts increase. So it's quite what this verse is describing is the insanity of the conditioned souls. This is the illusion that somehow or other having a sexual experience is the be all and end all, and that this sexual experience brings about a happiness. Somehow they strive for it continuously. So they're striving for pleasure, but actually as it's described in the Shastras, this striving for pleasure, for material pleasure, and the pinnacle of material pleasure is said to be the sexual attraction. I heard the contrary at one stage. that although sexual attraction is a really big draw card for this material conditioned state, apparently also if one is deeply addicted to drugs, that is even a greater attraction, I've heard. From people that we've preached to over the years, heroin addicts have told me that actually to get a fix of some drug, especially heroin, was even a greater thrill than a sexual experience. Whatever case, the conditioned soul is striving for some material pleasure, and it's a mirage. It's described in the Shastra as a mirage. It's like in the desert, it grasping after thing, a fleeting thing. It's not a real thing. Now, in the purport here, it says that without the mercy of a pure devotee, it is exceedingly difficult to free oneself from the bodily concept of life. It is, and we need the mercy of the pure devotee. We need the shelter of the pure devotee. But some circles in the meditation scene, in the yoga scene, in the Vedic scene, think that the mercy of the guru just comes. I've done nothing and all of a sudden I receive the mercy. That's not correct exactly. We actually have to make some effort to attain the mercy of guru. That comes about by having an idea that actually there must be more to life. What am I really? Who am I? K-I-me, the first question that a person asks. What am I really? What's all this mean? And all of us here in Krishna consciousness at one stage or another have come to this point of saying, what does it all mean? When I was a young man, I was very active in this pursuit, material conditioning, chasing after some pleasure. And after some period of time, by intelligence, my own intelligence, or karma from previous life, I came to a point of understanding, well, there must be more to this. This is just, a temporary situation, it's a fleeting sort of thing. So, with a little bit of an endeavour, with a little bit of understanding that I've got to search for real pleasure, Krishna from within, Paramatma, realises, oh, this person is a little bit sincere and is making an effort to find out the truth. Then mercy comes. And the more we observe ourselves, the more we try to know the truth, the more mercy comes. The more we surrender to the pure devotee, he helps to free us from this extremely difficult situation of the bodily concept of life. Now, in the Nectar of Devotee, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the 6th chapter, Srila Rupa Goswami explains that there are the basic principles of devotional service. So this is the effort that one has to put in. Rupa Goswami explains that if one wants to gain the mercy of the pure devotee, gain the mercy of Guru, gain the mercy of Krishna, the endeavour that one must make is to follow these simple items of devotional service, the 64 principles in total. And we have to follow them. And when we follow them rigorously, diligently, normally, then what happens is we receive the mercy of Guru and Krishna, of the pure devotee. He awards us more and more nectar and understanding of the real truth. One of those principles within the 64 items is circumambulating the temple. And it's auspicious that we're just talking about that today, because today Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Devotion in that section that the circumambulation of the temple is one of the principles that we have to do. But similarly, it says, also is very important to circumambulate Govardhan Hill. It's one of the 64 principles that we have to do. So as a devotee, we should make every endeavour every year to come and circumambulate Govardhan Hill, because it's so beneficial for us. So, the 64 items of devotional service should include all our activities. All our activities, our body, mind and speech. So, when you read these 64 qualities, these items that we should do, they encompass everything. All the activities that we do, everything that we're thinking about, and everything that we're projecting and speaking is encapsulated. Now, in the early stages of devotional service, the regulative principles of devotional service, to engage in them, we engage all our senses, and by that we gain the mercy of the Lord, and we also gain the mercy of the pure devotee. And as it's said here, without that mercy, it is very, very difficult, exceedingly difficult, to free oneself from the bodily concept of life, which is the illusory basis of sexual attraction. Now, who here thinks it's an easy road to release oneself from this bondage of material conception of life? This is the biggest challenge to all devotees. It's to free oneself from this incredible, insidious, conception, sexual attraction. It is such a difficult thing, but we have to do it. I'll just go over a couple of things. Sexual attraction in modern society is actually, in modern life, it is an insane life. From a devotional point of view, we can actually view what's going on out there, and actually it is a form of insanity. Sex is such a prominent feature in the social system. Everything, pretty well, is based on sex life. You know, the family unit, from the very early stages of life, one is groomed to have a nice family, to live with a partner, to raise children, to be harmonious, to be content, and so on and so forth. If there's good family life, then there's stability within the community, everything is going along nicely, everybody is satisfied. In education, a person achieves an educational standard for what? So that they can have a good job. If they have a good job, they can get a nice wife or a nice husband, and then they can look after their partner very nicely, and they can have nice sex life. So, even in politics, in every aspect, if you look at any aspect in our lives, sex is the predominant little thing that pops up. Like, say, for example, I was talking with Bhakti the other day, we're talking about the elections that are coming up in the United States. It is a known fact that the best looking guy, generally, is the one that people select to be their leader. So again, it's driven by a sexual attraction. It's not what qualities that person has, it's more just a surface thing. Oh, he looks pretty good. And the one thing that is a characteristic of a president is if he has a full head of hair. You'll hardly see any president that's bald. John Howard was an exception for a period of time, but now a person that had a little bit more hair came into the scene. So the point is that the sexual attraction is actually a very, very prominent thing, even in politics. Sexuality is divided into two basic divisions. The first division is the physical attraction. A man is attracted to a woman is attracted to a man. It's a very physical thing. In some instances, as we know within our society, there is also the attraction of the same sex. And that somehow or other is some karmic thing that has happened to that individual. They can't help it. They have an attraction to the similar sex. But it doesn't make any difference. Sex life is sex life. And so there is the physical attraction. Then there's also the psychological attraction. There's the psychological sexual attraction. That psychological sexual attraction is dependence, feeling connected, having a relationship with somebody, having a meaningful connection with somebody, interrelated, just having company, having somebody's company, in social intercourse, so on and so forth. This is also a psychological attraction. And in that, people actually start to figure, well, am I good enough to have a relationship with this person or that person, and they judge themselves. Do I look good enough? You know, should I use the next sort of fashion? How should I change my hairstyle? Should I use some gel? Should I wear this or that? Or, you know, how can I be more attractive? You know, shall I use a particular type of aftershave? Will that attract members of the opposite sex? And all the advertising will tell you, yes, put this shaving cream on and that will attract the opposite sex. Put that perfume on and it will drive men wild. So, there's a psychological attraction and a physical attraction. But sex permeates our society and it's hard to avoid. Absolutely hard to avoid. Who finds it easy to avoid the sexual attraction that's out there in the material world? Not many people. It is everywhere. If one drives down the street, we see ads on the road, we see ads on TV, we see the internet, anybody that has emails, you know, oh, who's this one from? Who's this email? I don't understand who that came from. Click. There's one naked body of a man, naked body of a woman. Delete. Next. So many different things. We can't avoid it. If we have some entertainment, any entertainment that's geared to entertain people of this world, it is sexually based. Predominantly, it's sexually based. More and more and more and more. In my father's time, it would be a rare thing for people to make a lewd statement or an overt sexual joke. It would be a really an anomaly. It wouldn't be something that's done. If somebody did it, people were outraged. But now, if you listen to a comedian or you listen to, it's always, always got to be some sexual innuendo in there somewhere. So it's very difficult. You know, even with music, if a person's listening to music, all the music today, every bit of music that is in today's society is based on some sort of sexual attraction. It is so difficult. Sometimes, when our kids were at home, and this was when our kids were at home, that was about 10 or 15 years ago, you switched on the TV for them to watch some children's show on Saturday mornings or something like that, and they had the video show on. You know the video hits? They still have that, I think. And they were just explicitly sexual. And these little kids were influenced by this, from a very early age, this sexual attraction. Even today it's worse. And it just goes on and on. But a seeker of the truth, a seeker of the truth, which we are as devotees, ask, well, what is really real? What is actually the real thing? You know, we understand that we are not these material bodies. We've got these bodies, we've got arms, we've got legs, we've got brains, we can analyse what this body is made up of. It's made up of atoms and molecules and cells and protons and microscopic cells. And if you break down this body, it is just a lump of different molecules floating around. And we're not that. We understand from the scriptures that we're not that. We're actually not these material bodies. In Bhagavad Gita, everybody knows this verse. What's the main verse in chapter 2 where Krishna says you're not the body? Prabhupada says, in this purport, any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul and nature, both material and spiritual, is called Vira, or most sober person. So we have to become sober individuals. This insanity of material conception of life is an inebriated state, it's a drunken state. And we have to become sober. We have to start to see through. As devotees, we have to see through this material conception. And our real nature or our real desire should be that for self-realization, for understanding who we really are. To enjoy this body is a temporary situation. As is pointed out here in this verse, like a person, they constantly make material endeavours to eliminate their unhappiness. So they know they're caught in this material body, they're unhappy. So how can I get happy? Let me have more sex life. And unlimitedly increase their pleasure. Pathetic. Because what happens is, but one can see that they inevitably achieve exactly the opposite result. It's the people that are engaged so much in sex life. You know, ultimately they end up getting some sort of disease. There's something chronically wrong. They perhaps get pregnant. Then they have to have an abortion. So many, like at the moment, there is a very big push to legalise abortion. It's now legal in Victoria. But actually, this is a horrific situation. The devotees can't make a direct comment or a protest. That's not what Prabhupada's mission is about. But we as devotees understand what an insane predicament this is. For sex life, we're willing to kill an innocent child within the womb. But the ramifications, the psychological ramifications of this abortion, this killing, is so detrimental to the individual that it scars them for many, many lifetimes. So we understand here, but one sees that inevitably it achieves exactly the opposite results. In other words, their happiness inevitably vanishes, and they grow older and their miserable condition, discomfort, increases and increases. So when you see people that are desperately trying to maintain some sort of sexual attraction, we see that time and time again, as age catches up with people and their body starts to decline, they strive in so many ways to just reboost their sexual energy. They get Viagra pills. They get people with Botox. You know, oh God, there's wrinkles. Let me get Botox. Get rid of this, you know. It's just that it drives them nuts. They'll spend millions and millions of dollars to try and maintain this youthfulness. But it's hopeless, and ultimately it all collapses. Sometimes you see on the news somebody that has had these different operations to stay young, to stay virile, and they've had breast implants, and they've had liposuction, and they've had this and that, and they look like a shriveled up old sultana, you know? And this poor old thing, she really thinks that after all spending thousands and thousands of dollars on this wonderful treatment to stay young, that she looks good. And in her own mind, when she looks in the mirror, she thinks she looks good, but anybody else goes, oh my God, what did you do to yourself? Or you have the young man, you know, who takes steroids, and he builds himself up, he goes to the gym and he's pumping himself up and he's got big, big muscles, and all of a sudden what happens, they collapse. And they just, you know, just, and all the steroids affect the brain, and their chin grows big, and it's all this horrible sort of things go, and still they think, you know, oh yeah, I'll take some more and I'll still be happy, I can still maintain a good sex life, you know. And then when it diminishes, they become really depressed. Oh, I can't have sex anymore, you know. So then they go and see a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist says, yes, it's all in the mind, you can still be sexually active. And so their state of conditioning is actually insane. It's actually insane. So self-realized personality, a person that's striving for self-realization, understands first and foremost, when Prabhupada was preaching anywhere, the first and foremost golden rule is that you have to strive to make the person that you're teaching, the person that you're preaching to, understand they're not this material body. You're not this body. Don't be so hung up on this body. You're not. You're a spirit soul captured within this body. And so, this body can never give you satisfaction. You can never attain satisfaction. You know, like Prabhupada gives that analogy of the working class man, you know. There's songs about the working class man and how he's a hero, you know. But actually, he's just an ass, you know. He works hard, day in, day out. And this is the guys, and it's also the ladies, that work day in, day out in a factory, working hard, getting a couple of dollars together to keep the house together. And they come home, and there's the missus. The missus has been working really hard to keep the house together, and the kids are driving her nuts, and, you know, but then they can come together for a little period of time for some sex life. And it's over in a few minutes. A few minutes, a few seconds, it's over. And then he falls asleep. And then he starts the whole thing again. And it's just some temporary relief. It's just scratching. It's just, you know, when you've got an itch, you've got to scratch. Ah, that's relieved that for a while. And then, oh, it's back again, and scratch again, and then, oh, again, and it's like that. So the whole sexual attraction thing is just a relief, temporary relief. But as a student of self-realization, we strive for more than that. We want to know what the ultimate truth is. But it's exceedingly difficult. We're trying very hard to live a Krishna-conscious life, and to follow the principles, and so on and so forth, but every now and again, it becomes exceedingly difficult. It smacks you in the face. It's everywhere. So, in society, society constantly is geared to agitation, to arousal. That's what it's set up. Because actually it's in the interest of the leaders of society to keep us in this insane state, in this inebriated state. Because they want to actually utilize the fodder, the assets, to keep working in this society for their own ends. But a self-realized, a person that's striving for self-realization, sees beyond that and tries to make a break, tries to escape the insane asylum. And that's what we as devotees are doing. We're escaping from the insane asylum. And that's not easy. And so we require the mercy of the pure devotee. This sex life is like hunger. You know, and that itch which we were talking about. And it is an incredible overriding disease. But what it leads to is, it leads to an exploited mentality. An exploited mentality, which is the total opposite to a devotee's or a pure devotee's or a striving devotee's mentality. A devotee's mentality is never to be exploited. He never wants to use anyone. She or he never wants to use anyone. But a materialist only wants to use another person. If you're completely conditioned, if you're in this insane situation, you want to exploit. You want more and more sex, you have to become more and more exploited. And you have to analyse when you meet someone, is this person going to be good for me or bad for me? If I meet with this person, are there going to be more potential opportunities for me to have sex life or not? And so a conditioned soul goes, well, he's good for that, she's not good for that, and so on and so forth. So he becomes more and more exploitive, and actually this exploitiveness is a form of impersonalism, because we don't see anybody anymore as soul or any deeper than just the physical situation that that person is in. So in Krishna consciousness, we minimize the arousal. We can't help the bodily functions. This is one thing that devotees have to come to grips with, that actually the sex desire is within us, and if there's nothing that really you can do about it, and so you have to somehow or other minimize the arousal. And that's why devotees dress in a very modest way, in a very charming way, that it doesn't arouse our god brothers and sisters in any way. So we don't want to develop this exploitive mentality, so we minimize the arousal. But this bodily function of sexual activity is a natural thing within our body. We can't help it. It's like if you go to a doctor, you know, and the doctor does a what do they call those things when they tap you on the knee? You know, and it's like a response, an automatic response. A reflex action. You know, so you sit there and the doctor taps you on the knee and the leg goes forward, right? So in the same way, sex desire is within us, but we have to control it. We have to, as devotees, we have to control it. Now that doesn't mean that, say for example, if we're working in the city or we're working with colleagues or we're somewhere, that we feel a sexual arousal coming up, that we think, oh, what a bad person I am. Here's a sexual thought or a sexual, you know, agitation. If we're Krishna conscious, we just understand it's a natural thing that's happening to this body. Let me be Krishna conscious. And you look at it from the point of view, you're not this material body. Very, very important point. Like, say for example, Prabhupada was asked, what happens when a devotee, because if you feel, oh gosh, you know, I fell down or in my sleep. And Prabhupada was asked that, oh Prabhupada, and the devotee was so upset, Prabhupada, you know, I fell down in my sleep, in my dreams, I had these sexual dreams, I'm so fallen. Prabhupada said, no, never mind. That's okay. That's from class. You're a conditioned person. It's alright. So we have to be really mindful that it's a natural thing within our body, but we have to counteract it by developing our Krishna consciousness. And with the help of the pure devotee, we can actually accomplish that. So we can see that we as devotees can see, okay, I'm not this material body, and that person is not the material body. We're actually consciousness, we're actually pure soul. And so let me deal with that person in a different way. In the material world, in a partnership, there's mutual exploitation. You know what they say, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. There's this mutual convenience, you know. It's good for me, so if you do this for me, it's good for me, and I do that for me, I like that. So this is this insanity. That's not love. That's what in today's society is categorized as love, you know. You turn me on and I'll turn you on and we'll love each other. That's not love. That's not understanding the real essence of the person that you're with at all. So the sex desire grows and diminishes due to the environment that we place ourselves in. The sex desire grows or diminishes due to the environment that we place ourselves in. So if we actually associate with people that are really lustfully inclined, then it rubs off. So we choose to be with people that are developing their sanity, that are developing their purity, and then that rubs off. Like say for example, in a classic example, my spiritual master Hridayananda Maharaj gives an example. If you're in a plane, you know, generally speaking, the materialists are always thinking of sex in different ways, wherever they are. You know, oh, she's making a good partner, oh, he looks really attractive. Always looking. But he points out that, say for example, if you're in a plane, like it happened recently in that Qantas plane, and you're flying along and the guy's sitting there reading his magazine and the hostess is walking down, oh, she looks pretty attractive, you know, she'll make a good partner later. This is the mind going, Then all of a sudden the plane goes straight down. Who's thinking of sex? No. It's like, so, or who thinks of sex life at a funeral? You know? Like if you're in a funeral, you know, somber, you have to keep yourself like that. So, even in a material sense, when the relationship between a mother and son, or a father and daughter, there's a different kind of love. There's no sexual attraction there. It's just, that's a natural thing. So the devotee diminishes, your sex desire diminishes by the environment that we place ourselves in. So we don't repress our sex desire like many different religious organisations do. You know, there are many, many organisations and different religious paths which repress the sexual desire. We don't. Within ours, you know, if one is a brahmachari and can tolerate the urges of the body and can stay fixed in brahmacharya, perfect. That's best. But if you can't, then there's a license that you can become a grihastha and associate and raise Krishna conscious children. How do you go for them? When I was, before I was a devotee, just to explain, you know, how in religious movements this frustration can lead to an even further insanity, I was a young 18-year-old and I wanted to become a priest and a missionary in New Guinea. And so I had the opportunity to actually travel to New Guinea to this mission. And in this mission were these men who were dedicating their lives to some spiritual path, but in actuality, they were so frustrated. They were incredibly frustrated. Some were homosexual. Some were having illicit relationships with different people in different villages and nobody knew about. And so on and so forth. And you can see in different religious institutions where this frustrated sexual desire pops up with pedophilia, with abuse of children that are under their care and so on and so forth. The papers we read that there's rife, it's rife. And so many times the church or some organisation has had to squash or repair the damage done by these people that have been so sexually frustrated. So within our ashram, we have within our institution, we have the Grihastha ashram. The Varna ashram system is so perfect that we have the Grihastha ashram. So if a devotee who comes to Krishna consciousness, either brahmachari, brahmacharini, can strive to maintain brahmacharya, fantastic. But if they can't, then they have the license to actually be a grihastha, and a grihastha understands that my partner is very dear to Krishna. Krishna is within their heart, they are pure consciousness, and I have to deal in a very delicate way. Srila Rudayananda Maharaj often explains that when a person enters into the grihastha marriage, it's not a two-way thing. It's actually a three-way thing. Krishna is always there. In every aspect of your life, Lord Krishna is always there. It's a three-way thing. So you love your wife or you love your husband with Krishna. And Rudayananda Maharaj states that when you go to bed at night time and you say, good night, darling. Good night, Krishna. Good night, Prabhu. Good night, Krishna. Krishna is a living, real personality within that relationship. And in that threesome, then you raise Krishna conscious kids. And you have Krishna conscious sexual relationships, which are done through the proper samskaras. The devotees know that this body is a big block. It's actually nothing more than blood, pustule, and urine. We know that. Even from the very first time, when we first come to Krishna consciousness, and the penny drops that we're not these material bodies, it opens up a whole new vista. The sanity starts to become real. So we understand, as devotees, that it's a big bluff. You know, people get so hyped up about the bodily condition. But I mean, all you have to do is just peel back one layer of skin. One layer of skin. And it's pretty yucky. It's not very pleasant. I used to work in a hospital, and I purposely worked in this hospital, as I was explaining to my mum the other day, because when I was a child, I had a major operation and I had a fear of doctors and blood. My mother and father were still eating meat, so say for example, if they would go to the butcher, I could never go into a butcher shop because I was so afraid of blood, you know. So I'd have to wait outside the butcher shop when they went in to buy the sausages or whatever they bought. So when I was 18, 19, I felt that I had to somehow or other remedy that situation. This was before I was a devotee. So I purposely got a job in the hospital. Well, if anybody has ever had any illusion about the material body, go and work in a hospital for a little while, you know? And you see, you're doing that, right? When the skin gets peeled back, just one layer, you just need one layer back like that and peels back, and you go, oh, God. What to speak if you go any further, you know, with the blood and guts, and, oh, that's horrible. But people think this is the be-all and end-all, this skin consciousness, this insanity. You know, really, when we analyse it, it's insanity. You have some men, you know, that become so bewildered by a member of the opposite sex, and girls, that become so bewildered. Oh, if only I could touch them. You know, and the girl will say, if I touch him, then I feel electricity. And the guy would say, oh, if I can touch her skin, I get a charge of electricity. It's so encapsulating. Rida Nandamara says, if that is the case, then what you do is, you ask your girlfriend, please go and sit out in the sun for a period of time. Get nice and burnt. Get the skin to burn. And then you can peel the skin off and you can put the skin in a little matchbox and you can keep this in your room. And every time you want to experience the thrill again of being in touch with your loved one, you can take out the skin. Here's my girlfriend. This is so limiting. So it's by the mercy of the pure devotee that we actually see the truth. We actually see what it's all about, what really is the situation, the bodily conception. And by striving for purity, the pure devotee gives us more and more mercy by giving us more and more knowledge and practical experience. Love of Krishna, a higher pleasure, spiritual pleasure. You know, we've all experienced that. You know, so many times we had a situation where devotees who are vital, young, strong, vigorous people come to Krishna consciousness and they give up their material connection, you know, their material thing. So we deal with this insane material world by becoming sane, by having the mercy of the pure devotee, and by making an effort, we become sane. Now, there's one quote that I wanted to quote from the 26 qualities of a devotee of Vaishnava behavior. And this is a really interesting thing. I'll just find it here. And it's a section, the devotee is without inebriation. So, apramatta. And in the purport, Sasvarup Prabhu says, the devotee's sanity, however, goes beyond the appearance of a cool-headed poise. So their sanity is more than just, you know, we look pretty transcendental with our devotees and purities and sarahs and so on. Understanding his position as the tiny part and parcel of the Lord, he does not have the insane view that he is the centre of the universe, because this is actually the material condition understanding, that they are the centre of the universe. And men, especially, have, you know, conditioned men have this feeling that, you know, actually all women are attracted to men. You know, this is their insanity. Actually, they're the most ugly looking guy on earth, but somehow or other they think, oh no, they're actually really, yeah, they're all attracted to me, you know. It's amazing. Sometimes within business, we do business with different businessmen, you know. And they're the most ugly looking, oh, I think I've got a chance with that chick, you know. It's just ridiculous. Whereas women, on the other hand, sometimes have an inferiority. Am I good enough for that person? And they feel really... So there's an insanity. So they think they're the centre of the universe, or that life is meant for sense enjoyment. Nor is he insanely attached to his family members. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.4, Sukadeva Goswami uses the word pramatma to describe the householder, the materialist, who does not inquire into the problems of life. In that verse, Srila Prabhupada translates pramatma as too attached. The householder is so attracted to his body, children, wife, that he neglects to inquire about the absolute truth. Sukadeva Goswami says that although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. So we have to be careful even as devotees. You know, we may have some temporary understanding or partial understanding, but we still have to be really understanding that inevitably this body is going to end up in destruction. The non-devotee often sees the devotee as a crazy fellow. Madhavendra Puri wrote that even though the wealthy Mammonites might point me out as mad, still he would take Krishna consciousness. Sometimes, to make full commitment to Krishna consciousness, a devotee gives up a promising professional career, leaves aside a PhD, or gives up an attractive girlfriend or boyfriend, and consequently is thought of as crazy. How many people thought that you were crazy when you joined the Hare Krishna movement? You know, what? You're becoming a Hare Krishna? You know? You're becoming a religious person? That's one thing. You're becoming a vegetarian? What, you're not going to gamble anymore? You're not going to have sex? What? You're insane. People classified you as that. True? Every one of us had that experience. Brothers, sisters, friends, relatives. What are you, nuts? So, living the philosophy of since ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise, the karmis cannot see any good reason why devotee has given up pursuing happiness in the material field. They think maybe he's psychologically incapable or an escapist. Brainwashed perhaps, or maybe just a little crazy. When the parents of Prabhupada's disciples remarked that they thought their sons and daughters were crazy, so the parents used to come to Prabhupada in the early days and say, my son's nuts. Coming to you, you know. Prabhupada wrote an essay entitled, Who is Crazy? He says the devotee thinks that the non-devotee is crazy, and the karmis think that the devotee is crazy. The question has to be settled by objective reasoning. I've already stated Srila Prabhupada's conclusion. He who lives and works for the perishable body is crazy, while he who invests his energy in that which is eternal is sane. In the age of Kali, the whole world is crazy, and to be sane is to be thought mad. By standard of absolute, the devotee has attained the right balance between material duties and spiritual duties. So there's the right balance. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained that both material duties and spiritual duties should run alongside parallel, both together. But if the pursuance of material duties seriously hampers the path of self-realization, then the material duties should be reduced. So we always have to seek a good balance between material duties, husband and wife, you know, businessman, raising funds, so on and so forth, and the path of self-realization. A devotee is not inebriated. He is not lopsided. He is not intoxicated by material pleasure. He reduces his material needs to a simple level and patiently dedicates his life to the service of Krishna. His life is therefore the real example of moderation, balance, and sanity. Krishna consciousness is not fanaticism. It is not another form of insanity. Prabhupada and the devotees point out here that a devotee has to patiently dedicate his life to the servant. So you be patient. You know, if you still feel lusty desires and stuff, be patient. It will go away. Lokanath Swami said one of the great joys of getting older is that finally this sex desire is going down. It's true. It starts to diminish. Now the materialist would go absolutely ape over that. Oh God, but a devotee is quite happy. So, getting back to the six items of basic principles of devotional service, as Rupa Goswami is explaining. So by getting the mercy of the pure devotee, we have to make an effort. So these are the 64 basic principles. Now, Rupa Goswami says there are five most important principles that one should follow under the guidance and direction of a pure devotee, of a guru. So the first one is worshipping the deities. So one should worship the deities. That develops spiritual consciousness. Now it's imperative that grihasthas, especially grihasthas, do some form of deity worship. As soon as you're brahminical, as soon as you have your Brahman initiation, you should seek to do some service at the temple to worship the deities. Something, anything. Prior to being a Brahmin, you can still do some service by engaging in paraphernalia work, But we, as grihastas in this big community, should see that it is an intrinsic part of devotional service, of our devotional service, to be involved with the deity worship. Today is a good example of that. We have an opportunity to help build the Govardhan Hill. Everybody's asked to make some sweeps and so on and so forth. We should participate. We should readily become involved in that, because what it does is it puts us into an environment of least agitation. When you're in the deity room, the last thing, like I was explaining in the plane crash and so on and so forth, the last thing that you're thinking about is sexual desires or any sort. You're focusing. You're having darshan with the Supreme Lord. You're with Krishna. And so you're able to do service. You're able to connect and be with Krishna all the time, have communion. There's a closeness, a surrenderedness, you know, a cleanliness, all attached to deity worship. So it is imperative that the grihastha do some sort of deity worship. That then translates back to their home. They bring that back to their home and to their children and so on. So deity worship is foremost. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam is the next one, point two. Hearing Bhagavatam. We have to learn. We have to study. We have to understand the philosophy. And if we constantly don't hear, you're not this material body, you're not this material body, you're not this material body. We hear so many lectures by Srila Prabhupada, and all of them start, you are not this material body. And sometimes we think, oh yeah, we've heard that. But it's not like that. We need to hear it all the time. So it's imperative that we read Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Shastras, hear our spiritual master, hear the words that they're saying. It is as important as chanting our rounds. We have to couple it with learning knowledge. We cannot just be devotees and think, yes, I'm chanting 16 rounds and not reading. We have to make an effort to read every day, because this is a purifying from within. The knowledge will purify us. And making the effort, then the pure devotee gives the mercy. Effort, mercy. So you'll have realizations which allow you to conquer over the sex desire. All of a sudden you're reading a section and you may be totally agitated. And then, oh God, I'm so agitated. You read a section out of Bhagavatam, cool, it's easy, it's gone. Some devotees were, in the early days, were so agitated with sex desire, they went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I'm so agitated with sex desire, what can I do? Prabhupada said, read the 10th canto. Read about Radharani and the gopis and their relationship to Krishna. Read that over and over and over again. That will cool you. And it does. It's a fact. So these sort of things, it's imperative that we read the Bhagavatam. It's imperative to stay connected with Krishna. Because they say to know Him is to love Him. So we have to know Krishna. So we're with Krishna, with the deity, we know of His pastimes from reading Bhagavatam. Imperative. The next one, number three, that Rupa Goswami says, is associating with devotees. So important. Like-minded people. Unarousable people. People that don't do things to arouse you. That don't disturb your equilibrium as far as your program to become sane. You go to a materialist party and everybody is out to impress the next person, you know, with some sort of sexual innuendo. A low-cut dress. Or tight jeans. Or this or that. You know, and it's just so provocative. It's just so disturbing. Sometimes we have to go to our family functions or something to do with business, and it is so disturbing. But we associate with like-minded people, people that are also on the path of sanity, and so we stay with them, and there's no agitation. You know, the ladies are quite comfortable to be on one side and the men on one other side, so there's no agitation. It's just normality. It's just simple. It's not that we think any lesser of either of the sexes, it's just that it's normal. It just cools the situation. If people were sitting next to each other and they're of the same sex, it's a disturbance. It's again, it's a natural, automatic response, you know, that you feel some attraction. And so it's best that you just segregate, with respect. So this is important. Now also in marriage. So in marriage you find a person that is like-minded. Not sexually like-minded, but spiritually like-minded. That you both strive for a spiritual perfection in your life. And that personality then becomes your greatest asset friend. You know? Where the husband or wife takes on the role of a spiritual guide and help. Not a sexual partner, That may be there. That's also there. There's love and sexual intercourse within marriage, and the result of that is Krishna conscious kids. Hopefully, Krishna conscious kids. Eventually, they will be. If they're not so swept up by what's happening out there, if they're not put in the state of arousal that it blows out everything that you've taught them. But we hope in due course that they can come back and have some sanity in their life. So, fulfillment of sexual desire is there in Krishna consciousness by performing the proper samskaras, and we can have a relationship with husband and wife. So that's sexual. That's on the physical plane. But then there's also the psychological plane. There's psychological attraction, as I was talking about before. And this is a very important point within Krishna conscious marriages. Sometimes, as it's pointed out, we are patient and we are moderate in Krishna consciousness. We are not fanatics. Not. It is not part of being a devotee. And so within a Krishna conscious marriage, that psychological closeness is imperative. Friendliness, association, closeness, affection, giving affection to one another, husband and wife, reciprocation, you know, pointing out the good points of the other devotee, helping in their sadhana, sharing a life together, being loving with one another. There's nothing wrong with that. That's actually permissible because we understand that this person that I'm living with is actually a child of Krishna. Krishna resides within their heart. You know, this body doesn't belong to me. This body belongs to Krishna, and Krishna has asked me to take care of that body. So this is what we have to remember in Krishna consciousness, that we're moderate and we're loving. If we are fanatic in our relationships in Krishna consciousness, if we are so staunch and we think we are such great devotees that I won't have anything to do with my wife, I won't associate with her, and she cooks for me, and because this has happened in the past, in the early days of Krishna consciousness, what happens is it brings about a disruption to the children within the family. Psychologically, it's been proven that even from a very early age, from a baby in the cot, you know, when the child cannot even communicate, it's just laying there like a vegetable, right? Basically, it's just that. Right? The child sees in the eyes of mother whether she's happy. And when the child sees in the eyes of mother that the mother is happy, that she has a happy relationship with her father, with her husband, then the child is content and will grow up normally. If the child feels mum is not happy and he sees it through her eyes because there's disruption between husband and wife, that leads to delinquency in later life. That is a fact. So it's imperative for devotees within Krishna consciousness to be very loving to one another as partners for the welfare of their children. So it's doing your duty, practical duty, modestly, moderately, normally, in the same way. This is very, very important. And the result is that you'll have a great life together. And you'll grow up together in Krishna consciousness. You'll gain mercy of the pure devotee. And you'll become realized. And then together you'll go back home, back to Godhead. The fourth one is Sankirtan. We have to perform Sankirtan. It is one of the most important items, one of the five most important. We have to do Sankirtan. Imperative. That doesn't mean we have to go out and rush out and grab books or anything. No. As grihasthas, we have to have a preaching mentality, a teaching mentality. We want to pass on this knowledge to as many people as we can possibly do. And we have to think of ways that we can do it, either within the temple or in our own lives with people that we meet. This is to show our non-exploitive attitude, which is the devotee's real demeanor. They're not exploitive. They want to give. They want to help. They want to comfort. They want to relieve the stress, the insanity of the fallen conditioned soul. We have had the experience of having a higher taste. We want to give that to someone else. This is Sankirtan. To have that mercy, to want to go out and share this with the world, as many people as we can. So this is the fourth point. No exploitation and the Sankirtan. We have to have a mentality of how can I distribute more books? How can I distribute this information better? How can I develop friendships? You know, Sankirtan means developing friendships. Sometimes we think Sankirtan simply means either collecting Lakshmi or distributing books and so on and so forth. No. The primary thing of Sankirtan is developing friendships. That a person sees you as their real friend, not an exploited personality. I can trust that person because they see me for who I really am. He doesn't want to get anything from me. He doesn't want to use me. He doesn't want to sexually exploit me. He wants to help me get out of this bodily conception of life. And that hits the soul. Just as the little baby understands our mum is happy and can see it in her eyes, similarly, when we approach materialists, conditioned souls out there, and we present Krishna consciousness by the mercy of our guru, of the pure devotee, they see it in our eyes that we mean them no malice. We mean them no exploitation. We mean them no harm except friendship. That's Sankirtan. And so then we can figure out ways, how can we best help them? Do we give them some prasadam? Do we give them a voucher to go past? Do we give them a bliss ball? Do we put something in our home that we can give to the next door neighbour or the person over the road or the elderly lady that's a pensioner down there? We develop friendships. We develop networks. That's Sankirtan. A devotee's main object is how many friends can I make today? How many people can I turn on to Krishna by my friendship? And it may start off. You respect where they're at and you develop a friendship and then they'll want what you've got eventually. So this is Sankirtan. And the final one is living in a holy place. You know, Prabhupada points out of the five, living in a holy place. It actually says in Mathura. So you have to make your home as a grihastha. If you're a brahmachari and brahmacharini, you're already in Mathura. You're already in Vrindavan. Everybody is here, all the personalities, everything's here. So, as a grihastha, we have to make our home Mathura, Vrindavan. The house belongs to Krishna, doesn't belong to us. And the first and foremost place in that house is a place for Krishna. Either in the form of deity or in the form of a picture. But that's the place where I go. That's the heart of my residence. Is where Krishna is. And in the mornings, if we can't come to the temple, that's the place where we focus our attention. That's the place where we communicate with Krishna. That's the place where we connect. And that's the place where we become sane. By chanting the holy names of God in His association. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare. Focusing ourselves and setting the environment for our wife, for our children, for our husband, for anybody that comes there, they walk into your house and say, oh, this is a temple. Yes, it's a sacred place. It's not a place of arousal. There's no agitation here. We want you to be at peace and we want you to learn about God. And that you're not this material body. So, and then there's always the greatest commandment, and it's the golden rule of bhakti, and that's Vishnu should always be remembered and never forgotten at any time. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastra should be servants of these two principles. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. The Padma Purana recommends, somehow or other, always think of Krishna or Vishnu without forgetting him under any circumstance. Actually, this is the most basic of all regulative principles. For when there is an order from a superior about doing something, there is simultaneously a prohibition. When the order is that one should remember Krishna, the prohibition is that one should never forget him. Within the simple order and prohibition, all regulative principles are found and complete. So this is the path of Bhakti Yoga, and it's a wonderful path of sanity, of normality, of absolute bliss and pleasure. And the more we actually strive for it, the more we get the mercy of the pure devotee. And when we actually come to realise it, that natural development, if we follow this process, the more we realise, my God, I'm getting the mercy of the pure devotee, the more we become grateful. Gratitude is a great force, is a powerful force within devotional service. We have to be grateful for everything that we've got. When we wake up in the morning, we're grateful that we've been taken out of this insane conditioned life and that we've been given the opportunity to actually develop our spiritual sojourn back home, back to Godhead. We become incredibly grateful. We fall at the feet of the lotus feet of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you, you saved us from insanity. If you were put into an insane asylum for no reason, somebody just walked along one day, saw you walk on the street, said, you're coming with me, and took you to an insane asylum, where they're all loopies, absolute nuts, you know, and you're put in with them. And you're thinking, I don't belong here. And you tell the doctors, I don't belong here. I really don't belong here. I'm not crazy. You know, you would absolutely do anything for somebody to come and just take you out. Oh, I'm sorry, we got the wrong fellow, and take you out. So that's our condition in this material world. We are thrown in this insane asylum, but at one point, we as individuals decided, hang on a bit, this is a nut house. I want to get out. And then the spiritual master came. And then by effort, we make some effort, he gives mercy. Effort, mercy. Effort, mercy. Effort, mercy. Until we go home back to Godhead. If we don't apply the effort, the mercy stops. And that's why you see, sometimes the devotees are not making the effort, and they leave. And we're all sad, and they go back to this insane world. Who wants to go back to that world? Where you're bombarded by sexuality. Where you're bombarded by this insane temporary condition. You know? We want to go back home, back to Godhead, and enjoy infinitely with Him, with the Supreme Lord. He's the creator of pleasure. He's the storehouse of pleasure. Whatever minuscule, minute, little pleasure that we can get from sex life or from anything else in this material world is minuscule. It is absolutely small time. To be with Krishna, you have an ocean of bliss, unlimited, eternal, forever, forever young. Oh God, I'm not that song. I sing it all day now today, I know. So, we want to be forever young with Krishna and enjoying with Krishna and relishing the pastimes with our friends, with our associates. Because everybody that you meet here and everybody that you befriend here and everybody that you love here is also there in the spiritual world. So your husband, your wives, your children and everything, they'll be there in the spiritual world. And your husbands and wives are from previous lives. But all together, you'll be loving Krishna as one unit. And that's a wonderful condition. So we just have to strive. I know, it's exceedingly difficult, as it says in the purport. It is not easy, but it can be done by the mercy of Guru and our effort. So I'll stop here. Any questions or comments at all for this? Yes, Prabhu. So we have to think of ways. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, I read an article on the internet that said men, women still have lustful desires, they should only read the first three cantos of the Bhagavad Gita. I suppose he said many things in his talk,
yeah.
And for different people.
Yep.
I don't know if you.
I haven't actually, no. There are many, many different things that Prabhupada has said in different time, place and circumstances, you know. The one thing that we have to become really open about in our Krishna consciousness is to be completely open about talking to other people about our sex desire. It's one thing that within ISKCON is actually is like a, we're not going to talk about that one. You know, when we say we're revealing our mind to people, you know, sometimes if a person has sexual difficulties, you find someone that you can console with, that you can talk to, and say, listen to me, I've got a problem, you know? What can I do about it? Don't leave. Don't leave. So many devotees have left, you know, because they've had problems. And they say, I can't cope with it anymore, I can't bottle it up, I can't talk to anybody about it, because people will think I'm fallen. And I think, oh God, you poor thing. You know? I had one young man come to me and say, to Bhakti myself, you know, I'm living in this relationship and I just can't live with the principles. I think I have to leave. I said, no, Prabhupada, that wasn't Prabhupada's mood at all. In the letters to his disciples, Prabhupada often said, you know, look, a lady would write, I'm going to leave my husband. He's constantly asking me for sex. What do I do? Prabhupada said, don't leave. Accommodate him. Accommodate him. Just accommodate him, and it will change. Keep him chanting Hare Krishna, keep feeding him prasadam, it will change. Patient, moderate, normal. We had one devotee that we were preaching to when we had a preaching centre in Geelong. Very nice boy, very sincere, you know, strived in so many ways to serve, understood he wasn't this material body, was making rapid advancement. He had a problem. He was homosexual. You know, he had desires He fell down by himself in different ways. He felt really dirty, couldn't talk to anybody about it, was so frustrated, so in anxiety, he killed himself. He hung himself. Waste of human life. Waste of human life. We were so upset, so distraught, that we couldn't connect with him. And just say, it's okay. In the scheme of everything, does Krishna really see your petty little problem? Krishna never sees our petty little problem. Krishna only sees the good that we do, the service that we do. Krishna only wants your love. You know, if a little baby soils its pants, you know, does the mum and dad say, oh, what? You soiled your pants. How dare you, you know? No. Mum and dad just clean up the baby. It's okay. You're all right, sweetie. No worries. Next time you make the potty. Krishna is our loving father. He's our lover. He's our friend. You know? If we have some hiccup, if we have some difficulty, you reckon he's in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan going, oh, that bhakta does. Look at that. Oh, he'll never come back here. No. No. Oh, well, too bad. The big boys flustered again. Come on. Up you go. Let's go. Next time better. You know how we say in Krishna consciousness, you know, if a person has a fall down, what happens when we fall down? We get dirty and dusty, right? If you go, you fall down, right? You get dirty and dusty. What do? What's the first thing you do when you stand up? You dust off. And the dusting off process is these 26 principles of Rupa Goswami. You dust off. You take up again. Okay, what do we do? Okay, I've got 16 hours to do. Okay, yeah, we've got it. Let's go. Back into it. And if you need to speak to somebody, then you see that person that you think will be confidential, that won't go blabbing it about. Oh, you know that bucket. You know what he did. No. You find somebody that's your confidant, that you can take in privacy and say, Prabhu, listen, I've got this problem. And he'll help you. The older devotees will help each other. You know, because you've been through it. Don't think that you're the only one. You know, don't think there's that whole thing, you know, people think, oh God, if I'm the only one with a sexual problem. You know, nobody else has got it. Everybody's a pure devotee, you know. I'm the only one, I'm so fallen. Oh, wow. Oh God, I'm so bad, you know. No, we all have it. And we all have to deal with it. And so those devotees that have been, that's why we look up to older devotees. That's why we give prominence and a little bit of honour to an older devotee, because they've been through it. They've hung in there. They've hung in there, you know. It's not an easy thing. It's exceedingly difficult. But these people have hung in there. So, hey, hang on a tick. What's the secret, fella? Hey, Mataji, how did you manage to be here after so many years, you know? What did you do? Ask. And in confidence. Don't let this be a thing that we keep in the closet. You cannot. Cannot. It's not such a big thing. We can expose it to the person that you trust and is your friend, confide in them. It's not a big thing. Within Krishna, Krishna doesn't see it even. He doesn't even care for it. He only wants your service. Dust off. Come on. Back again. Dust off. Come back again. You know, in a fight, you've got 15 rounds. How old are we? How old can we live? 100 years maybe? 95? We've got 95 rounds to go. Let's go. It's a fight, but it's a fun fight. And then you get the mercy of the pure devotee and you can go a little bit further, a little bit further, a bit stronger, a bit more realization, a bit more spiritual pleasure. Yeah, we're getting there. And then you get to a stage where you have like a person like, you know, a great devotee, and you just idolize them, you know. So we strive to get the mercy of the pure devotee by making an effort. Is that okay? So I hope that's answered some of the questions. Any other questions or comments? Whoa! Thanks, Prabhu. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. Tell you all.